Human design is a part science, part spiritual system that tells you who you came here to be. You have your own blueprint, your own way of becoming successful, your own way your dreams are going to come true, the way you'll experience the most joy and fulfillment. The instruction manual for how to move through the world is custom to you. When you act according to that manual, when you act as the real you, everything in life comes to you with more ease and less resistance. We all know we're different, yet we're still acting like there's one way to do life. Let's talk about it. To find out your design and the designs of the people in your life, you can visit myhumandesign.com or download the My Human Design app in the App Store and on Google Play. So I want to talk today about the importance of keeping a fluid identity and why it actually sets you free, because especially in a world of social media, but it has existed since the beginning of time, we feel this sense of security by defining what we are, right? We want to say, I eat this way, or I'm a kind of person that likes these colors, or this is my dress sense. I believe in these kinds of politics. And I think the reason why we do that is because we feel like it gives us some kind of self-acceptance door that we can walk through that allows us to, if we can name something, then we can know it. And we're hoping that by constructing this fixed identity, we can maybe start to like what we are. And actually not knowing what we are just kind of feels a bit discombobulating and weird. But ultimately, there is an axis that our lives sit on where the known is safe and the unknown is unsure and unsafe, but ultimately also more freeing. And in the same way that right now, as we move into the new paradigm, there are less constructs in our outer world, and therefore that's leaving us feeling very untethered and ungrounded, but also it's full of promise, it's full of levity, it's full of lightness, it's being able to soar quickly, it's change happening quickly, but also very destabilizing. It's the same thing with the constructs that we create around our identity, right? So we cannot simultaneously feel a sense of freedom and a sense of safety to a very big extent. And so this is more of a sort of practical tip about all of us as we embark on this journey of, you know, spiritual growth and becoming who we really are. Becoming who you really are is not a process of figuring it out on paper and knowing it and naming it and then trying to be it. It is actually the opposite. It is letting go of feeling the need to be this kind of person, or thinking that how you are today is going to be how you are forever, or that it's truly a continuous part of your authentic self, because your authentic self is an essence that comes underneath all of these things that are available to us in all of the human experience. And a lot of the times what we try to do is we try to wrung these things. And so we go, well, I'm a jealous person. I'm a consistent person. I'm just not a jealous person, right? But actually, we all are everything in the spectrum. So if you think that you are not a jealous person, I would challenge you to say, maybe I'm not jealous in the areas that I see other people be jealous, but where am I jealous? Because that exists in me. Maybe I'm not totally consistent, but where am I consistent? Maybe I don't love pink, but where do I like pink or pinkness? Do I like it on a flower? Do I like it on something? And so it's like, we don't have to always die on these hills of declaring to the world how we set ourselves apart from other people to feel special. Actually, if you let your need for specialness die, you get to feel so much more free to be you on any given day that other people aren't giving themselves that, because they are living in the prisons of thinking that they have to define themselves constantly. And every time you define it, anytime you define anything, you create lines in the sand around it, right? And so that's when it also creates limitations on how much your soul can show itself to you, what it really is, because it can't do so out of your consciousness, out of what your mental awareness is. So your soul is never going to show you you're a gardener if you have so many judgments and limiting beliefs, and you've told yourself over and over again that you are a fashion designer, because the only thing you could be a fashion designer is a fashion designer, and maybe a jewelry designer, but that's as far as your mind will go, and you think that's very open-minded, right? But if you completely let go of declaring to yourself or to the world, I'm a fashion designer, and instead approach every moment of, I don't know who I'm going to be, that is scary, but it is more freeing. And also, you're not creating these hills to die on. So the very obvious example is like all these people that went vegan, right? And then now they're having to declare to the world that they're meat eaters or that they're intuitive or that they're whatever. And it's like, neither of those is better than the other, but you're just creating and spending this extra energy on having to constantly declare who you are. And in doing so, you hold yourself accountable to people who you don't need to hold yourself accountable to. You don't owe it to people to declare who you are. You don't owe it to other people to declare who you are or to yourself. And what happens is, therefore, you actually have a much easier process of ego death if you aren't defining your ego so much to begin with, right? And so as much as it can also be tempting, especially on social media, to try to set yourself apart, trying to figure out what your unique thing is, whatever, we're moving into a time where it's really our frequency that's going to speak for itself. It's really our energy, right? It's the gifts that we put out to the world. It's not who we tell other people we are. And so, you know, you see this as well, like, oh, I used to be more in fashion, but now I'm moving into photography. And guys, I'm not a fashion person anymore. And I'm so sorry. And think about how much energy gets wasted in this redefining, redefining, redefining. Whereas if you just crack on and get on with it, people are attracted to the fact that you're self-evolving and not evolving for the sake of evolving and changing identity, but if your frequency is getting higher as you go. And so it doesn't matter if you're changing phase 100 times or if you're changing phase once in your entire life. It just matters that people are going to resonate with the frequency of what you're putting off, not the form and the content that is actually being put out as a result of that. So you know how they say, like, you know, get on with your processing quiet, like it really is that in many ways too, because people are going to feel the side effects. You don't have to explain to people what you are all the time. We are all energy readers anyway. We can feel it. So it's also time that we stop creating this like mental tension for ourselves about which one am I, which one am I not? And then you feel better about yourself when you say, oh, well, I'm not insecure about other people's bodies. Okay. When you have that thought, but what are you insecure about? Right. And in doing so, when you stalk all of the qualities of human beings inside of you, when you catch yourself noticing them in other people or in yourself or in the world around you, you create this level playing field between yourself and all humans. And ironically, that is what makes you feel special, just because you are living out a unique path of different combinations of human qualities and likes and dislikes in the specific order that you are, but not because, you know, everyone else is insecure and you can deal with being angry, but as long as you're not insecure, or everyone else is angry, but you're never angry, or, you know, any of the, you're not superficial. Of course you're superficial in some ways, right? And so whenever we create this binary of what we are and what we are not, it's now really truly our work to try to dissolve and try to actually stalk the places where we are those things we've told ourselves we're not. And also to not preemptively, create these definitions that we declare to the world about who we are, so that hopefully they think well of us, or that they admire us, or that they can know what we are. It's okay if people don't know what you are because they feel what you are.
I think it's partially what you and I were talking about yesterday, how it's really difficult in even in a social situation to just be and just see what happens and see what comes out of you. It's really difficult. Like, almost our identity structures make us feel safer because it helps us predict, like, how would this person act? Okay, that's how I'll act. It's just safer. So even in, you know, the context of a career, for example, being like, oh, I'm a fashion designer, that just makes us feel safer of, okay, I know what steps are between here and fashion designer. But if I didn't have that, then what?
Mm-hmm. And I think that they're fine if they are, let's say they're slightly less deranging if they are more about what you do rather than what you are. So I think you can say, I design clothes, right? For now. But I think if you say, I am a person who loves beauty, or you can say, I'm a person who beauty is not important to, the work now is to realize that neither of those are true. They're both true for different areas of your life. And the same with, I gave up, you know, everyone's now like, I am weight training because of this and because of the science and because of this and this, and muscle mass is important to me and longevity is important to me. And again, it comes back to how much are you allowing your priorities to be hijacked by the homogenizing force of society, right? Like, is that truly important to you? And even if it resonates with you, are you allowing it to become top of your totem pole of priorities, right? Or can it just be something that you resonate with a little bit? And, you know, we've spoken about this, but the amount of freedom I have in being able to, not really know which workouts I'm into and just do the ones I want when I want them. And I wake up every day and I'm like, do I want to dance today? Do I want to do Pilates? Do I want to go for a walk? Do I want to do Trisiana? Like whatever it is I want to do. And then not let that determine what I'm going to do tomorrow, not delineate it into a part of my character and not make that part of my persona that I present to the world. Because unless I am a person that is here to share my workouts, that doesn't need to be a part of my identity, right? I don't need to create an identity around anything other than what my product or service is to the world, right? And even in that case, it is a very small fraction of that identity of me, right? It's not the full picture of who I am. It's just the part that you see that I provide in the exchange of goods and services between us, right? Right. And so it's so important to not create these extra hills to die on, because of that actually strengthens our persona. And because right now the amount that we can transform is directly proportional to the amount of ego death we're comfortable with having, this is just such a practical place to for all of us to look, because it's something that is such a part of our lives on the daily, especially like I said, with social media. Like, what a great place to start to look at is, where are you defining yourself that maybe you don't need to?
Right. And I think the workout one is an easy, simple example to look at, because it's not like, you know, life like changing, like controversial. Okay. So you, for example, you like to wake up and just decide what kind of workout you want to do that day. Me, for example, I'm a bit more consistent in my design. And so I will get on like a train of something where I'm like, oh, I'm like really into Pilates right now. But I'm also careful to not be like, Pilates is the only way to be healthy and fit, and this is the only thing that's ever going to work for my body. I'm very mm-hmm. aware that there's a point where I might feel I do need to move into weightlifting, and I am feeling that right now. And I've been doing Pilates for like 5 years. Like, I'm thinking about getting pregnant. I'm thinking about these things. And it's like, you always say, yesterday's medicine is today's poison. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah.
That is something I always think about, where I'm like, I don't want to ever get too attached to what I think my body needs, because my body might need something different tomorrow. And I have to be open to listening to that. And that's the same with our identities.
Yeah. And isn't it so beautiful to the freedom that that opens up, because you're not then creating this feeling of betraying an old version of yourself. You allow the past version of you to have been your own medicine, to have gotten you from one place to the next, and to have played the necessary role in that specific step towards your evolution, like along your path. And you're not looking back and wronging it. You're saying, oh, that was the thing I needed in that moment. And then this is the thing I needed in this moment. And, you know, even in small things, for example, maybe it's easier for certain of us to have these, you know, this ease of flow in different areas. Like you said, for some people with workouts, it's really hard. For some people with diet, it's really hard. For some people with schedules and planning and being with your kids and how you get together with your family and how you work, what time you wake up, like everything we do in our lives, we can either try and automatic pilot it. And there's obviously a beauty in that as well, because certain things need to be on automatic pilot. But when they start to feel a little bit janky, we should feel free to revisit those things. And so for me, for example, you know, everything is a flow. Everything is a yin and yang and a rebalancing in this world, right? That's one of the sort of scientific cosmic laws of the universe. And the last 3 days, I've just been going deep, deep, deep into cosmology and human design, like the origins of the universe. And I've just read and read and read. And yet there will be times in my work, quote unquote, that are all about talking, 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 right? And so which one of those do I count as my work? Neither. It just is. And that's a big, big part of what, you know, the highest levels of consciousness on this planet are, is it just is. Nothing is good or bad. It's sometimes a match for you and sometimes not. And it's up to us to be our own energy readers in that moment to really measure that frequency match, you know, like how you would on a dating app, like, is it a match? But ultimately nothing is good or bad. And so when we make something good, we are by definition making something else bad. And when we make something else bad, our world gets smaller, because it means we then have to go back into the bad, right? And make it good, which is so discombobulating and confusing to our worldview and our way of moving through the world. And it does create this chaos and this step change that is more complicated than it needs to be. And it creates so many parts that you can't allow yourself to step down because you've told yourself, well, there's a part of your subconscious that thinks it's bad. And so it's okay to say it's not a match for me, but that's very different than saying I think it's bad because something else I've decided I'd rather cling to feel safe. And, you know, safety in itself is an illusion. And that's the part that, I mean, it takes my breath away to say it because it's never not crushing to realize that, because there is no certainty in the world except for the certainty of, you know, from a human design lens, our bodies, our passenger in our bodies is driving us towards our destiny, whether we like it or not. And our free will is maybe slowing it down or helping it move along. But ultimately, there is this intersection at which destiny is always going to try and override that. And that's where we should be sourcing our safety from, right? So there is a safety almost when you uncling to the more easy to see forms of safety that we're all just desperately running around trying to you know, die on those hills. And if you have done the New Paradigm series in the app, it's a long list of workshops, deeper dives into these kind of themes, you know that we are so held and we are so loved by the universe, and not in a sort of nebulous woo-woo way, but in a true constructed way, that this time that is so destabilizing for all of us is here to get us into that better version of safety. But it has to honor our free will first. And so through our free will, we have to, it's on us to get rid of our attachment to the sort of silly certainties and safeties if we want ourselves to be allowed to be held by the forces of the universe. We can't have both. And we can't be conditional. Like, when I'm scared of being held by the forces of the universe, I like go back to my old ways. And of course, the universe is so graceful and so understanding and so loving that it does allow us to semi-dip our toes in now and again. And it allows us to numb and distract and, you know, run away and be scared sometimes. But the degree to which we can get used to not clinging to ego definition, that is going to behoove us so much this year, next year, and 2026 for sure.
And we do know that in order to like make a change, like the previous way of existing has to feel like we're just like done with it. It has to be more worth it to make the change than to not make the change. And so I think when you say about how, you know, your destiny is going to, you know, try to come to you no matter what, but our free will can sometimes slow it down. Sometimes that dying on a hill could be what's slowing you down. Because if you say, no, I am this, I'm dying on this hill, then you might never leave that hill and see if there's a better hill for you. And so it's actually doing us our own just destiny-ish, I guess that's like a big thing to cling it to, but it is doing it a disservice by dying on one hill.
Yeah, absolutely. And they come in all sorts of forms and we're so blind to all of them, but it's mostly our mind that gets in the way. You know, I'll give you one that I still struggle with to this day. And you know, the story is that, you know, for years I drank green juice every single morning, and mentally, conceptually, I still love that idea. Like, I want to be a person that enjoys it. And you know what? I might wake up one day and try it and be ready for it. And my emotional authority will tell me today's the day and that will be it. But I just can't physically get on board with it. And so is the struggle coming from the fact that theoretically, I think it's superior to drink a juice every day? And that's where my suffering is coming from, right? Is by judging myself for not being a certain kind of identity or living a certain way or making a certain choice. But I've been living my design now for 11 years. I do know better, but it doesn't mean that my mind doesn't still go, are you sure? Really? And that's a silly example. But, you know, if you think about all the other things that we can accrue in 60, 65 years, you know, to get to certain places where something that is so part of our identity, we don't even see living without it as a choice. We assume that everyone goes to the office every day. Everyone, you know, has struggle and fights every morning. Everyone, you know, that's just the way that life seems to you, right? And so this is where we need to let go of our worldviews. And I will say, a really, really key place to look for this whole conversation about why your destiny is trying to pull you is to your incarnation cross. Because I think we try to talk about what our purpose is so much, and we try to define it as a job description, and the universe is like, honey, your purpose is so much bigger than a freaking job description, you know? But if your incarnation cross is ultimately the place, the sort of destination that your soul is trying to orient you to towards at the by the end of this life, the more you can realize that bringing the energy of your cross to everything you do actually is going to show you some places where you can unbecome certain hills that you've died on, right? So for you, for example, being cross of explanation, if you're trying to always, I don't know, keep quiet and not, if you're afraid of coming across as someone who's explaining things to people, right, then that would be a place where any limiting belief that you have about that being more of a people pleaser or more of a melder, you don't have that. But, you know, as an example of what people who, oh, it's dangerous to stand out too much, don't draw attention to yourself. You know, those are really big things for some COEs. And, you know, me, all the shadow that I had around being sensitive as a child, like, and all of the story around being it, around not being it, am I, aren't I, instead of just being like, you know what? I don't need to define what that is. I don't need the world's description of what that is to even tell me about what mine is going to look like. As long as I don't stand in the way, let me see if my body can show me a unique version of what that is, which my mind has not seen yet because our world hasn't caught up to it. The other thing I want to just remind everybody is also that, you know, like you said about where we've been is not where we're going. Our bodies are so different, like physiologically different than they were 200 years ago. When 200 years ago, you lived to your Saturn return, you lived to 28 years old. So by the time you were 14, 15, you look at Romeo and Juliet, that's they when they were having babies was 14 years old, right? That was the halfway point of their life. That was when they came of age. And so, and for us, that's massively extending because we have a longer lifespan. We're not Saturnian beings, we're Uranian beings. So Uranus takes 84 years to go around the sun, Saturn only 28 to 30 years. And so our growing up, our coming of age, and it's so strange to say this in a world that still expects you to know the answers about what you're doing with your life when you're 21, is we only can get there, even close to there, when we're 40. So everything up to 40 is just a F around and find out, like, what you are, self-reflect, reflect on the universe, reflect on life. Like, there's genuinely no hurry. And I think part of sometimes what I see in our sort of underlying frequency is all of us being in a hurry because we think that we are behind already, if you're 30 or if you're 28, but actually you're not even close to being at the halfway, right? And so we're judging our like arrival to the old timeline. When that old timeline isn't applicable to us anyway.
I know, which that is, it's so hard to grasp that because I feel like our generation is the first generation that's like, that's really obvious to us. Like, we really are, you know, making changes in the timeline of when we're doing things. So I understand why that's hard to grasp. But also I want to point out, you mentioned your strategy and authority or your emotional authority telling you when it was time to not drink the green juice, when to drink the green juice. I think it is important in this conversation of like, how do we know when something is an identity that we're supposed to let go of?
That's such a good question. I think you don't have to, you know, lock yourself in your room and meditate and figure out what your, you know, what your identities are right now, because life is going to show you. When you have a desire to change something in you, the universe, the benevolent force, whatever you believe in, is going to say, oh, Roger that, on your command, here we go. I'm going to send you the exact conditions in your outside world to help answer that question for you. So the physical realm is not only our creation ground, but it's also our information ground, right? So it plays the role of both our input and our output. And so essentially, when you have a genuine ask, like, I want to see where my identities are, there is a law of propensity and a law of proportion, meaning that the degree to which you have the bent to know is going to be the degree to which it gives it to you, and also the degree of proportion to what you want to know, right? So it might start giving you gentle ones if you're in a gentle space. If you're really desperate in your life, it might give you bigger ahas. Or if you have a very big desire, it will also give you bigger ahas about those answers. But it will always give you the ones that you need, right? So maybe if you're listening to this and you're like resonating with the green juice thing and you're like, I just can't get my body on board with it right now, or I'm trying to, I don't know, up my protein, but I can't, it doesn't, and it's not even about that. It's like, does it sing to you on your cell level? And if it doesn't, you also don't need to go out and make a stance about that. It doesn't mean that, you know, sometimes we feel like we need to make it right for everybody else in order to validate that it's right for us, you know? And so there's no part of me that's going out there and poo-pooing green juice because I still think it's fabulous, you know? And I'm not about to look into the science and say cleansing is a myth and, you know, greens, too much greens is bad for your thyroid and kale does this. And, you know, we're such addicts of objective information. And one of my real hopes for the next couple of years, at least, is that we just find the cosmic humor in our addiction to objective information, because so little of it is even true. So many vectors of life don't even need to have objective information. So just remember the law of propensity, the law of proportion. So you will always get what you need. And if you are someone who has a bent towards meditation, and that is one of the places where you feel like you love to communicate with the world, then by all means, go and meditate. But I say that because I don't want people to think that their spiritual life is separate from their real life. Like, everything is here because we have form. Right? The only reason why there is an existence of consciousness is because there is a vessel for it. So consciousness is going to be in everything that you see, touch, move through the world as, if you know how to, you know, pay attention to it. And there's not a special skill required in paying attention to it. It's literally just asking the question. And then how do you look out for it? You catch a judgment you make about other people. You catch a judgment you make about yourself. You look at a quality that is going on in the world around you, on your phone, out in the restaurant or whatever, and you see how you process that, or what you think about that, right? What meanings you ascribe to it, if it creates a positive association in your brain or a negative one, and both are to look at, right? Because if everything just is, then it's all here for color and entertainment and fascination and play and just for us to watch. Whereas if we say, oh, that's so nice, you know, they're still together after 30 years, it can be like, oh, that's beautiful. Like, how amazing to have that kind of love. But there's such a difference between that and that means that's the only good kind of relationship, for example. That's a very, you know, basic example that I think most people, you know, listening now sort of understand the futility of that. But you just want to watch your reactions to things and the color that you're splattering on a world that is essentially all neutral in terms of its goodness and badness.